Good morning, everybody. Thank you all for coming this morning. I think I would like to call this meeting to order. It is a little bit after 9, and we are calling the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board meeting to order. I guess the first thing is a roll call. Is someone able to
call? Susan Fowler. Georgiana Schuster.
Here.
Kim Fisher.
Here. Oh, here.
Vicki Nicelander.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Oh, she just walked in.
Just walked in.
Sorry. Ann Robin is here.
I didn't hear Susan Fowler. Is she there?
She's here.
I'm here. I'm sorry. I forgot the mic.
Okay, thanks.
Leah Taylor is also here.
You don't count.
So just so you all know, Vicki is on Zoom, so we need to take an action that's not listed on the agenda. You ready?
Okay. The action is to allow Vicki Nicelander to be involved in our meeting. And I need a motion.
I so move.
And then a second?
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. So Vicki is involved in our meeting. Okay, the first...
You'll need to vote.
We need to vote?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed?
The motion passed?
No. Okay, so the motion has passed. And next is the approval of our agenda. Oh, Susan.
I move to approve the agenda.
Thank you.
Second. This is Vicki. I'll second that motion.
Let Vicki do that.
Vicki is seconding that motion. So all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion has passed. In our booklets here, we have a listing of our schedules and our timetable. We have acronyms and glossary. We have time for citizen input and public participation. So that's when people get to stand up and speak. Is there anyone here who would like to do that? Yes? Do you want to come up to the microphone? Can you? You might have to touch it so that there's a little spot there at the bottom. Yes.
Is it on now?
It is on, yes.
Okay. I'm Nancy Eatman. I live in Urbana. I am on the Respite Task Force of Illinois now, and we meet 6 times a year. And I've written down my concerns, and I hope this board can address these things in the future. There's an obvious shortage of caregivers for those with DD. Can we have a federal immigration program that would give visas to those who want to care for the DD population? Right now, we have classifications such as nanny for children, but we don't have an adult caregiver category, to my knowledge. At present, an online high school diploma does not meet the minimal requirements for becoming an aide for the DD population. More students are opting to go for an online high school, what you call GED. Why isn't the online GED accepted as a qualification for someone who wants to work with the DD population? If an adult in a wheelchair needed respite care today, where would they go? I have no idea. Where is there an open bed? Does anybody know? If an adult over the age of 60 with DD needs residential care, why can't they be admitted to a memory care unit, assisted living, intermediate care facility, or skilled care facility directly by their guardians? Why, at that point, do they need to go through all the hoops and have an ISP, whatever it is, come to their home, evaluate them? Yes, you can do this, you can do that. And are these facilities that I categorized unable to accept a DD adult per regulation? It seems that the CILA type situation is the only viable solution. If someone reaches the age of 60 and is medically fragile, and we all become that way eventually if we live long enough, where can they go other than a CILA? Another point is we are very short of CILA inspectors. The CILAs are not being inspected and evaluated on a regular basis as per regulation. We are short. We're short caregivers. We're short what I'm calling inspectors. What are we doing about that? And could an adult daycare program be established in Champaign County with a special grant? Well, I don't know if those of you who are very young remember, but do you remember when Champaign County Nursing Home had a very good daycare program? It was well utilized. It seemed that they accepted a variety of people, and they had provided bus transportation. It was, I think, an 8-to-4 program. It enabled caregivers to work. It gave these adults a social situation, a meal. They included time for a shower if it was required and, you know, paid for somehow. But anyway, it was a wonderful program. We no longer have that. And then my last part is to say, please stay focused on the needs of the DD population and do not become distracted by other well-meaning programs. And I have a copy of this for whoever would like it. Thanks. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. We welcome all public participation. If there is any more, we'll hear it now.
Looks like no one on the Zoom is raising their hand.
No one on the Zoom. Okay. Then we'll look ahead or move ahead. There is a spot here for chairperson's comments, and I don't really have any comments, so I can move on, but Vicki might. Do you have a comment, Vicki?
I just apologize for not being there today. Several people already know that I had a major surgery on Thursday, a knee replacement. So I'm still recovering from that. Hopefully by March I'll be ready to go. And I appreciate everyone being there to do the work that needs to be done. And that's all I have to say.
All right. Next, we have the executive director's comments.
I tried to write them down on a tiny post-it note to contain what I'm going to say. I'm looking forward to this meeting. Actually, we've got some presentations, which is always fun, and lots of information, and not a whole lot of action for y'all. Just the three things. So it should maybe it'll be, you know, good, feeling good. So I just spent 6 days of consecutive conference sessions, 6 full days. Mostly pretty heavy topics, but I really needed to find the positives and share the positives with you, and there are some positives. First of all, the first 3 days were NACO, which is National Association of Counties, and my main obligation there is on a health policy committee, and we have
when I started in that group, there was no mention at all or acknowledgement of intellectual and developmental disabilities, in spite of the crisis that we have all been feeling. So the fact that they weren't talking about it at all was kind of shocking. They do now. They also, to my great delight, they're talking about a lot of things that are important to us. It used to be just nursing home regulations, but now there are elected officials across the country who are really interested in the things that are important to us, including the workforce shortage. So there's a little growing awareness of intellectual and developmental disability system problems and needs and the value of community-based services. So yay for that. But at NACBID, the National Association of County Behavioral Health and DD Directors, the integration of IDD is amazing. Like, they're really taking it seriously. Almost every session has IDD somewhere in the title, like we are not going to leave people out. And even better than that, they're going sort of deep. We had a presentation from HRSA, which is the main funder for the federally qualifying health centers, about initiatives that they have that are very specific to supporting people with developmental disabilities by having their parents be the trainers of healthcare professionals who will work, especially children with autism. So that was really refreshing, really nice, and a whole session devoted to another thing that we've all been talking about forever, and that's people with developmental disabilities when they also have a mental health need, whether it's severe or short-term. Like, that's been a huge gap in our system. And, it was the director of NAD, the director of, they're all NA and then a smash of other letters, three different associations working on a conference on MH and DD. So that was great. And then just to kind of to acknowledge the workforce issue, I wanted to tell you that the first session that we had was called kind of, I think it was something like Introducing the New Behavioral Health Workforce. And it was actually very young people, four really young people. The moderator was really young. And they were talking about what has inspired them to come into the field. Mostly it was behavioral health, a little bit DD also, and what the barriers were. And to no one's shock, money is the big barrier. Like, it's money. A little bit about, supervision could be better and more direct when you're young and new to the field, but it was really mostly about money. So, big rocket science there. And then finally, this is done with the conferences. We've started preliminary work on the agency requests for funding. The board members and staff can access all of the forms online, but it isn't, as agencies know, it's not always easy to use. So we have other ways that people can review the applications, including downloaded PDFs, which I will share with all of the board members today. So if that's an easier way to review. And then if you want them printed, that's also something we can do. That's it.
Thank you, Lynn. It is encouraging to hear that people are talking about DD much more, and also that advocacy is coming to the forefront. Okay, so we're moving on. We have another approval thing. We're going to approve the board meeting minutes from last month. So I need a person to make that motion.
I'll motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. And you'll?
Second, Susan Fowler.
Thank you, Susan. So that motion is made and seconded. We need to have a quick vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. And opposed? Okay. That is approved. And the next action is on our vendor invoice list. We need to approve those. These are things that were paid during the month, the previous month, during January. And I went through this a lot because I'm kind of a financial person, and I talked to poor Chris over there quite a bit too. But the vendor invoice list that's on page 20 gives us one total, and the account detail history that's on pages 21 and 22 gives us another total, and I wondered what is the difference between the two. And one is a cash basis, what actual checks were written, and the other is an accrual basis, what was actually due that month. So all is good, and I just need another motion, I guess, to approve these vendor invoices.
A motion to approve the invoice list.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Just does everyone, all in favor, say aye.
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 And opposed? Okay, we are through with that section. And now everyone has had a chance to look at the staff reports. So we're going to move right on. Were there any comments on that? Yes, it sounds like Kim has a comment.
I just had a couple questions maybe for you, Kim. I wrote down next to the audit for PACE and the issues for CU and Autism Network, like how can we help or how can we be more supportive to them? So for the PACE not having the audit, do we need to do anything more for them to help make sure they continue their payments or?
You did last month?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but okay. At the time that I wrote this, we hadn't had the meeting. I'm sorry. So
I thought the payment was just till this month, but so I guess I forgot when we made the extension until. Like, do we need to do another extension is what I'm asking.
I believe that was extended, right?
You approved payments until, I think there's a point when the contract's canceled,
yeah,
if there's no audit, and that's March 30th.
Okay.
So you approved payments up till then. If it looks like the audit is going to be later than that, you can approve waiver of the contract cancellation. So that's an item that we could bring you in the March meeting, and it would not be too late. We just need to know from PACE what their expectation is. But as far as supporting them, I think they have a good auditor. I mean, I think they're doing the work and they're doing it better than we could. We shouldn't anyway. But
yeah. No, I think that's what I meant.
Yeah.
My question of how can we support them, do we need to extend anything more further?
Oh.
But it sounds like we don't.
Maybe in March.
Maybe in March. Yeah. Okay. And then for the CU Autism Network, they're like shifting the grant a little bit.
There's two contract amendments that are out for signature, and there's a weekly reminder that's being sent. I've spoken with their executive director. It's in their board president's hands. So I'm not sure what, you know, aside from driving to his house and telling him to, you know, there's a weekly reminder being sent for that. So. He is nice, but I feel like that's overstepping, so.
Just one other thing. So Chandra talked about being part of the Urbana School District's Teen Mental Health First Aid site. So I wrote, how exciting. That's great, Chandra. Thank you for that update.
Thank you. We're still working on the logistics with the National Council because unlike being certified in mental health first aid for adults and the youth and other specific populations, with the teens, because of the liability of working with young people and them having these skills, the National Council of Well-Being wants to make sure that there is consistent sustainability. So they actually have to go through a process of applying, and then they'll name me as an instructor to begin helping teach the students, but there has to be an on-site coordinator in order for it to ensure that it can be implemented.
Thank you for the update. So I was watching last month and this month's Urbana School meeting. So they had one last night, and they were talking about just tremendous need for children at the middle school level. So I was just wondering, when it says teens, is it more, you know, obviously teens kind of are at eighth grade or so, but would you guys at all be working at the middle school level potentially?
So what it would be is, I think you have to be 15 to 16 years, 15 to 18 years old in order to take the training. And these are peer-to-peer situations. And so what could happen is where high school students or their peers would be able to come and provide that support, like in after-school programs, at football games, basketball games, social situations. And so that's what the model hopefully implements, so that their peers would be supported by their friends. And usually if there's an older sibling involved, they're usually the first people that may hear of something about a younger sibling. I don't know if it will change over time, but but just to answer your question, middle school students are not going to be trained. It's usually sophomores that are usually trained as the people implementing, the responders.
That makes sense. Thank you so much for that extra information.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
My mic's not on. Hello. We have some new business for today. We're going to have some reports, and the first one is from Community Choices. They will be talking to us about transportation and staff retention.
Okay, let me pull up my slides.
This is very exciting, Becca. Thank you for accepting the high-tech mission.
Let's see. Okay. Is that working? Oh, look at that. Okay. Great. And really wants me to turn the volume up, but I'm not going to listen to it. Sorry, I can't. Everything's covering the slideshow button. All right, there we go. So I'm Becca Wachowski with Community Choices, and we had two new programs that we started in FY24, and so I'm just going to kind of talk through those. The first one, and also, excuse me, I'm like have this lingering cold and cough, so if I go into a coughing fit, my apologies. The first one is transportation. So this was a program that we started based on a lot of community input, based on, I know this was a topic that had been discussed here at the board meetings. It's something that many of our members brought up and that came up, you know, in conversations statewide. So we decided to try to address it. So the way that the program works is that rides are available to any Community Choices members. And so just with our structure, you can choose to be a Community Choices member to do participate in our like social opportunities, our leadership opportunities. Our like employments and our community support programs don't require membership. It's a very, very similar process. Either way you go, there's a very small fee for being a member, which we waive, no questions asked, if that's a barrier for somebody. But to sort of just create some nice sort of boundaries to the program, and we did decide to make this available just to our members at this point. Rides can be to pretty much anywhere a person wants to go. So errands, but just sort of starting and stopping within Champaign County. Rides do need to be scheduled the day before, and then essentially we have drivers that come and pick the person up at the scheduled time, take them to wherever they're going, and drop them off. So it's a little bit of a mix of a sort of an Uber, Lyft, rideshare, and like a paratransit model. So it's an individual driver, it's somebody the person knows, but it does need to be scheduled. So it's got kind of elements of both. We have three drivers. We have Boyd, who works from 8 to noon, Janelle, who's there from 12 to 4, and Lyle, who is there from 4 to 8 p.m. So who is eligible? As I said, active participant or active community choices members. Folks do need to be registered on the PUNS list or eligible for those services, and they need to live in Champaign County. Rides are not for family members. Our membership does extend to the family members of our of the folks with disabilities, but these rides are really focused on the individual. Unless they needed a family member to ride along with them for some reason, that would be no issue. Obviously, they must be on the PUNS list, and those folks who don't live in Champaign County would not be able to be served. So rides are available Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. We hoped that we would kind of catch most of people's, you know, work day, a lot of people's avail, like, you know, the times that you're sort of most likely to be out of your house doing things. So types of rides, as I said, it's really available for everything. So work, leisure, visits to family and friends, medical appointments. We do offer rides to our social opportunities now. So that's an option for folks now, errands. And then people also have the option not to tell us. So there are a few limitations. So we did decide that we didn't want to become sort of the de facto transportation for other services that are specific for people with disabilities. So we're not, for instance, offering rides to like CUSR events. And they have at times, I'm not sure exactly of the status right now, but they have offered their own transportation services. So we've kind of capped the number of rides people have at 12 right now. We started off at 8 rides per month. We got started with rides in early August, just while we staffed everything up and got everybody trained. We started with 8 because we didn't know how much sort of capacity we would have, how busy we would be. And we realized we did have more sort of availability, so we did increase that to 12 starting in September. And we're continuing to kind of track this, and I made sure to tell people, like, this may change, you know, it might go up, go down, depending on kind of the busyness of it over time. That being said, if there are specific events in a person's life, or if, you know, there's some sort of need for an additional service, like, we're happy to work with people, and we've been doing that up to this point. So rides do need to be scheduled by noon the day before. Our transportation coordinator, they have kind of a 9-to-1 schedule, and so getting the ride scheduled for the next day by noon allows her to send out reminders, make sure that the drivers know where they're headed, kind of sets up the schedule and make sure everything can fit together. And then rides can be offered up to a month in advance. We decided to simplify things. We got like, well, is it a rolling month? And so rides open up the 15th of the month prior to, so you know, February 15th opened up March rides. Our transportation coordinator is Morella McMurray. And a lot of people, we started out using kind of an online reservation form, which people can still use. Although I think as people have gotten to know Morella better, a lot of times they're just calling her, texting her, and just kind of working things out directly with her, which is great. Rides are first come, first served. And then in addition, so we never intended for this program to meet every transportation need. We don't want any of our programs to meet every single one of a person's needs because we want people to be using the resources that exist in the community and have sort of a range of opportunities, of options that they can kind of go to for whatever that's going on in their life. And so sort of in order to support that, we wanted to make sure that there was sort of additional options built into the program so we can help people get an MTD bus pass if they need that. We can help them learn how to use that fixed route system. We can help folks learn how to use the ride sharing apps. In addition, like learning how to use some of the technology that might make people feel a little bit more comfortable and confident using some of those kind of technologies. And that can be for the person. It could also be for the family. So we can work with people to like set up the, you know, like Find My Friends, or there's lots of other apps that you can use as part of those, like Uber, to make sure like, okay, I feel sure that, you know, my person has gotten off at their job because I can see on my phone that they're, you know, walking into the store or whatever. And that was one of the things that we did some sort of surveys and sort of conversations with a lot of our members sort of prior to starting the program to sort of just see, like, you know, what services are you using right now, or what are the barriers that are keeping you from using some of those services? And obviously the cost of Uber and Lyft is prohibitive for a lot of people. But I think maybe just as significant was sort of the sense of safety that people had, and not knowing, like, who's going to pick them up. Is that a safe person? And so some people, you know, are they going to let the person off at a weird place, you know? And so I think there's, for some folks, the use of these technologies can help sort of create, like, a little bit of, like, mitigation to that risk or to that fear, that allows you to sort of, again, access that service. So right now, and this I made in mid-January, so it's changed a little bit. So far, we've had 25 total riders out of our 87 members. So it's about 29% of our members have used the service so far. And I'll say some people use it, like, we see them, like, every day. They absolutely use all their 12 rides. There's some folks that use it just once or twice a month. Kind of given some of the demographics of our riders, as well as we really wanted to make sure that we could sort of reach the folks who lived in the surrounding communities. Obviously, there's way less options for transportation for those folks, and so we've been really encouraged to see that that a lot of the folks who do live out of town are taking advantage of it. So again, as of mid-January, we'd given 431 rides. The vast majority of those were for work. You know, trips to work, picking folks up from work. The next sort of highest one was community choices events. And this, honestly, I probably should have created different categories when we started doing our tracking, because this can include our social opportunities, which are very structured and our staff are there. It can also include some of the like the meetups that happen between our members, where, you know, we may have helped set that up sometimes years ago, and it really just runs itself. But they are, I think, for the most part, all Community Choices members who are in attendance. And I think when we ask folks, they say, yeah, that's a Community Choices thing, because they feel like it's part of that sort of community. And so just to, you know, sort of clarify that that could be, you know, specific to things that we've set up, but it could also be things that our members have set up themselves. But then also, you know, a lot of appointments, errands. We have some people that, you know, we see them once a week to go pick up their check and cash it. It's really nice to sort of see people build in some of that routine a little bit. Yeah, no-shows, not a big issue. Folks have been really communicative. That's gone really well. So we also have been doing, just to kind of get sort of ongoing sort of program feedback and evaluation for the new program, we've been distributing a monthly survey to all the participants who've used the service that month. And it's the same every time. So we were hoping to be able to see kind of like, what is the impact of the program over time? We haven't had super great response rates. People, you know, don't love filling out surveys. I think we're actually going to shift to a quarterly thing. I think people feel like they're repeating themselves, so I get that. But they have the opportunity to kind of give us general feedback on that survey as well. And so I included some of the quotes that were provided to us there. And I will say, 100% of the people were like, this is very helpful and has had a positive impact. But folks said, you know, I like the drivers. They're kind and courteous. I feel they drive safely and I feel safe. And I should say, too, that the survey goes to both the individual who's using the ride, as well as if they have an involved family member. So that person can also give feedback of kind of both the impact on them, since we know that parents are often sort of the de facto transportation providers, but also what impact that they see maybe is affecting their family member. So having an independent form of safe, on-time transportation is so important. He is able to be more independent with Community Choice's new program. Thank you. I feel secure in knowing that the drivers are part of the Community Choices team and reflect the values in their interactions with riders. We're grateful for this wonderful service. My son feels more confident working with other people than his parents for transportation, and he looks forward to his rides. He feels confident and safe with his drivers. He has a good rapport with them, and it continues to boost his confidence or independence. And then amazing service. Everyone is on time and very professional, always notified of drop-off, easy to reserve a ride. Love it. So we've been really encouraged with all the positive feedback, and I'll just say it's really nice to be able to just offer like a really simple, helpful service, right? There's not a lot of strings attached. We're not asking people to really push themselves in ways that are uncomfortable or scary. We're just trying to make the other places that we're doing those things a little bit easier. So that was that. And I can go on. We also had a staff recruitment thing, but I can take questions in the middle, whatever you guys would like. There's not quite as much to say about this one. oh, absolutely, yeah.
Sorry. Are the rides for people in wheelchairs also? Yes?
So right now our drivers are using their own personal vehicles. So we don't have an accessible vehicle right now. But if a person were to need that, we've looked at some other resources in town. And what we would do is work with them to find that same ride and offer them the opportunity for us to come along if they didn't feel as comfortable with that. So that we know that that is a limitation of the program right now. We don't own any vehicles. As I said, all the drivers are using their own personal vehicles. But as we kind of continue to see the need and the program develop, I mean, I think that's definitely something we are thinking about. Hmm. Yes.
I'm just curious about, since the drivers are using their personal vehicles, mm-hmm. I'm sure they have insurance. Is there extra insurance or liability that's associated with being a driver?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great question. And that was one of the things that we, it took longer to figure out than we thought it would.
Yeah.
As we were planning the program, just hearing from insurance companies is never like super easy. but we did, so we sort of require that all of our drivers have a certain level of insurance, and obviously they need to let their insurance company know that they are providing that service as part of their employment. And then we purchased an additional kind of like package on top of what our normal liability insurance is. So yeah, great question. Yeah.
Just a follow-up question, not related to insurance, but when it's a medical appointment, let's say for getting vaccinated or seeing a counselor,
mm-hmm.
Do they drop off and then come back and pick up, or do they stay and wait?
Yeah,
does it vary?
That's a great question. That varies, and actually figuring out like all of the different sort of like what type of rides people were going to use and what's an easy way to help people kind of reserve those so we know like everyone has clear expectations. We decided that if the person is going to be there for 15 minutes or less, the driver would automatically wait. And we just ask the person when they make the reservation, like, you know, are you going to be there? We're happy to come back. If it's longer than that, if they're at like an hour-long therapy appointment, you know, if they're, you know, going to the mall and doing some shopping and they're going to be there for an hour, hour and a half, we would count that as two rides, but we're more than happy to set those up. Yep.
Just a quick question on the surveys. It
yeah.
says that you send them out monthly.
Yes.
How many, I know you said 100% of the respondents
mm-hmm.
gave good feedback. How many people are actually responding? I don't mean like a real number, but like an approximation.
Yeah. I think when I made this, we had a total of 29 responses, and some of those might have been repeat responses. I think we do tend to, like, the people who respond to surveys and the people who don't. But, a percentage, that's a great question. I mean, it's, you know, on any given month, it's been about between 15 and 20 people, I think, using rides. And we've probably gotten, you know, between 5 and 10 back would be my guess, but I would have to check. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll keep going. And if you have other questions about this, I'm happy to answer those. So we also, obviously, there's been lots of discussion about staff recruitment and retention. We did want to provide the opportunity for both like a sign-on bonus and a retention bonus for our staff, assuming that they kind of stay in the field. And so that started also this past summer. So here the program structure is for full-time staff. They are eligible for full-time positions, a $500 sign-on bonus upon completion of their 90-day kind of training and probationary period. And for the on the retention side of things, the staff are also offered a quarterly bonus of $500 if they've completed kind of a minimal level of professional development and are in good standing. So they can't have had like a formalized warning for something. So far, we've given 29 bonuses, 4 sign-on bonuses, and 25 retention bonuses over the two quarters. And just to give you a sense of some of the professional development that people have participated in, advancing access and equity for people with disabilities, unlocking potential pathways for competitive employment, and how working impacts benefits. We had a staff who's been working through the SOAR online disability application system. Folks went to the IDD and mental health conference that the ARC offered, interpersonal communications and conflict resolution for autistic teens, website accessibility with PICSO, ableist language and disability professionals, and voting rights in the disability community. And so we continue, you know, some of these, there's so much professional development that's available now. I think particularly after COVID, there's just lots of really great opportunities. And so we try to all share those with each other when we see ones that feel really applicable. And we also, you know, when there's conferences and things, you know, we try to make sure our staff can attend those as well. There's a, I forget the name of it, but it's here, it's at the iHotel in the spring, I think early May, about competitive employment, about employment that a number of my employment staff specifically are going to attend. So we did, you know, it's early to be able to say, like, yes, this is really effective for keeping staff. But I did go ahead and just kind of ask people, like, you know, who worked there. And I made sure, I'm always just like, I don't want people to feel like they have to answer. But I, you know, just gave them the opportunity, if they wanted, to share some feedback about the program. And so some of the things folks said were, honestly, were very thoughtful. So in the disability field, it's really easy to believe, It's really easy to believe saying, like, sorry, there's no money. And when an organization goes out of its way to make sure you're getting extra money, it definitely makes you hesitant to consider leaving. I enjoy the work I do and the people we work with. Our work has intrinsic worth, but we should also be financially compensated for the quality of the work we provide. The retention bonus to show that Community Choices and also the CCDDB values the work that we do. And then working in the DD field, it is well known that there's not a lot of money to go around. Acts like this let me know that I'm appreciated and valued. So here's some, you know, again, we don't have a huge staff, so there's not a ton of data. But just kind of looking at so far, and honestly, a few people did this after I put the presentation together, so there are a few more responses. And I will say that I think the only difference was in the if you were hired since July, did the sign-on bonus impact your choice? There, I think there was maybe one person who was like, I didn't realize it when I applied, but it was very nice and helped me like take the position. There was kind of that write-in answer. But obviously, you know, a couple people were like, well, I wasn't really thinking of leaving anyway. But otherwise, people have felt that it has been a really positive experience for their kind of, you know, work feelings. And so just basically in summary, you know, we're hopeful that this initial data would suggest that the bonuses will continue to have a positive impact on our staff recruitment and retention and just the staff culture overall. We have been really fortunate to have a really excellent, really experienced staff. And our intention is always to create an environment where they feel supported and want to continue to provide those excellent supports into the future. And so I'm extremely appreciative to be able to offer this to my staff. You know, we're not able to pay them, you know, the amounts that some other fields are. And I think we all know that and that's okay. But I think feeling appreciated in your role, it makes a really big difference. And so it's been nice to be able to have another tool to offer that to folks. All right. Yes.
So, I know you've done it only for two quarters so far, but potentially it provides up to $2,000 retention a year.
Yes.
Which I would think might be a significant addition to salary. Mm-hmm. How do you benchmark the salaries? Are they comparable to what other agencies comparable? Are they comparable to other agencies that serve people with ID, DD?
Yes. They are, and we've been kind of following the updates to the sort of the statewide updates to the waiver services and people who are just like exclusively working within the waiver system. We've been following kind of the recommendations from the Guidehouse study. Obviously, those are very quickly becoming somewhat out of date. It's amazing how quickly these things happen. But our intention has been to sort of make sure that we are both increasing our starting salaries to continue to be competitive while also trying to we have done in the last couple years some salary adjustments for some of our very long-term staff. We have always tried to compensate our employees like on the higher end in the field. And I think that is a big reason why we have been able to hire and retain such experienced staff. It's unusual for us to hire somebody who is brand new. A lot of people have many years of experience going into it. And so we do try to compensate them accordingly. But I don't know exactly how much everybody else is paying, so it's a little difficult to say. But we are definitely trying to stay competitive and be really thoughtful about making sure people continue to feel like their salaries are meeting the changes with cost of living, which we all know are going up.
So as a follow-up question, I assume that this is in addition to whatever the annual increase would be to their salary. It truly is a bonus, not
correct.
A way to increase the salary year to year.
Yes, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Glad it's helping.
Yeah, me too. Any other questions? And if anything else comes up, you've got my email, and you're welcome to reach out.
Thank you, Becca. Now I think we have another presentation that's coming from the Dual Diagnosis Program and Person-Centered Planning and from the Regional Planning Commission.
Hi. Okay, so the first thing we're talking about this morning is the Dual Diagnosis Program, which I have Tiara here with me today, and she is our case manager for the Dual Diagnosis Program. She currently has, well, when we did this, 9 individuals receiving services. We've gotten a few more referrals since then, so we're slowly climbing up in that program. But at the time of creating the PowerPoint, she had 2 individuals receiving weekly services, 6 individuals she was seeing biweekly, and 1 individual that she was working to determine frequency with at her next appointment. She had 1 referral in process, and 2 more referrals that we were waiting the personal plan completion on so she could begin services with. Eligibility for this program, the individual must have an intellectual disability, developmental disability, and a mental health diagnosis, and we must have documentation of the diagnoses. They must be enrolled on PUNS, and they must be 18 years of age and or older and no longer receiving services through the school district. So these are some of the things that the Dual Diagnosis Case Manager works on with individuals that she's serving. So increasing social, emotional skills,
She's worked on developing coping skills boxes, planning layouts of stories to help decrease anxieties related to being out in the community. She's worked on learning and improving daily living skills by creating weekly task lists, development of weekly cleaning lists, working on cooking skills and kitchen safety, and grocery shopping and meal planning, and then development of social and communication skills through games to facilitate conversations, worksheets, and giving assignments to talk to people while in the community. They've also used a conversation ball to help with this. Increasing interpersonal skills, doing this through working on developing healthy relationships and friendships, conflict resolutions, support systems, and social network development. And then linkage for community resources. So she's helped people with completing Medicaid and SNAP applications, LIHEAP applications, and some other referrals to RPC programs. And then referrals to local other local DD provider agencies and connecting individuals with local transportation using their Medicaid benefits. So here's some examples of some of the things that she's done. Here is one of the coping skills boxes that they've created, a weekly task list. I know some of these are kind of small, and I apologize. This was a before picture of an apartment, and then this was after they worked on some of the organization skills. And then this is the conversation ball that they've been using. Oops, I went too far in my... And then some of the cooking that they've done. That's kind of a really quick run through of some of the things that she's been doing so far for the dual diagnosis program. Do you guys have any questions about that? Yes.
Well, my question is where do your clients come from? How do you get your clients?
Sure. So some of them have been referred to us through the person-centered planning case managers that we have. We've also sent out flyers to Community Choices and DSC so that they can make referrals. And I've also sent flyers out to anyone who I know has been on PUNS. Of course, that's getting a little bit more difficult now that we're not managing the PUNS list. But we had it up until the end of June. So anyone who I know was on PUNS through June who would meet those requirements, you know, being over the age of 18 and having, you know, a dual diagnosis, I've sent flyers to so that they know about the program. So they could come from our person-centered planning case managers, from one of the local providers, or from a family member.
Family member, I don't remember receiving anything like that. Did you send it directly to the clients, or did you include the family?
So it would have been sent. It depends. It would have been sent out to, if the individual retains their rights, it would have went to them. If it was someone who had a guardian, it would have went to the guardian. And it would only be people who are on PUNS list, no one who is state-funded.
Okay. Well, I think you may have missed a few people.
Okay.
I was really pleased to see that the program was available. It used to be available through Rosecrans, and mm-hmm. they gave the grant back or withdrew from providing it. Mm-hmm. I have an adult son who participated. They were serving about 40 clients. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely helpful in crossing the divide between DD and mental health, because it was often hard to get agencies to work with someone who was both. Mm-hmm. And they would say, we'll only work with one or the other. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy about that, and I'm eager to hear more about the development of the program. What do you think your ultimate capacity might be? And
Yeah, so we're looking at, you know, 15 to 20, just depending on, you know, the needs of the people being served at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I apologize if I missed someone.
No, I mean, this isn't a fault finding.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just going through, like, the folders that we had for people who were active on PENS when we uh-huh. had them, so.
Yeah. And then just another follow-up question. Mm-hmm. You know, the services are multifaceted, social, emotional, mm-hmm. home skills, et cetera. Are you coordinating with some of the agencies that also provide those services? So if a client comes to you and becomes involved in receiving these services through RPC, if they're also, I'm thinking through what I've done for my son since Rosecrans withdrew several years ago. He gets independent living or community support, for example, from Community Choices to do some of the very things that you're doing. And so I'm just looking for coordination versus overlap. Mm-hmm. And how are you identifying that?
Yeah, so we would look at the outcomes on the person-centered plan. And so the person-centered planning case manager would have the outcomes on the person-centered plan, and then that goes to Tierra as well, so she can see what's also already being worked on. If someone is already having their needs met with their current services, we wouldn't have a referral to her. So she would make sure that she's working on something separate, so it's not a duplication.
I'm going to speak for you, Kim, but how many years ago? 2010? No, not that long ago. No, it wasn't that long ago. Okay, all of the DD contracts, well, almost all of the DD contracts also require reporting on the individual service claims level so Kim can see overlap. And she analyzes that each year, which will be coming in March. And what you often see is the overlap is really brief. It's transition from one program to the other. And then if she asks the agencies questions, and I'm still speaking for you, but typically they know about it, and there's been an overlap on behalf of good care. So that's not every case, but we have the ability to look for that. I mean, I don't know how to use that system, so this is 100% Kim.
Yeah, for the last few years that I've been pulling down all of the claims data for each client, it's been less than 5 clients that have had any type of, like, maybe they're enrolled in DSC Community Employment and Community Choices Community Employment. It's been less than 5 every year, and I can always go through and see, like, oh, they were closed from one agency in August and maybe open to the other one, you know, mid-August. So, like, there was just 2 weeks of, you know, one agency closing, one opening. It's never been anything where I'm like, what is going on here? And I haven't actually, I can tell by the claims, I've never even had to ask the agency what is happening.
I was doing that using Excel spreadsheets for a while. It was horrible, but I loved it. It was like a, you know, bottomless pit. But I asked, and the answers were always like they knew about each other, and there
That's
was
great.
Yeah, it was, and the whole idea of collecting that level of data started with board member questions that we could not answer,
right?
And the agencies also could not answer. They didn't know who was getting served elsewhere. So, I think it's been a great development, but it isn't easy to maintain, and I don't even know how to use it.
I'm very impressed that we've been able to do that. I remember being on the board, another board, mental health, when we were asking those questions. So I'm in the habit of asking questions like that when there's a new program. The other question I have is their independent service plan. So again, just thinking of my own history and not meaning to personalize this at all, but we developed an independent service plan with a person from RPC, and then Prairie Lands then took over, and our service plan is, you know, well over a year old, and I don't think I've had any follow-up for quite a while. So how would you have a current service plan, or would you have what RPC had,
so
or what the new agency has?
Yeah, so if you have a person center plan through Prairie Lands,
not yet.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you're working with Prairie Land, we wouldn't have the plans that Prairie Land are doing, because if someone's getting a person center plan through Prairie Land, they're state funded, and so we wouldn't be able to work with them because we're only working with people who are county funded.
But Prairie Land takes over Champaign County for doing person-centered plans, right?
For state-funded people.
They did last July 1st. Mm-hmm. So.
So we're working. We are working with people who are on the PUNS list,
right,
and that have county funding, but they took over for people who have state funding.
So if you're on a home-based service waiver, that's state funding.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't recognize that there was a difference between the two. So these are individuals on the PUNS list who aren't able to access home-based service waivers. That's a big deal. Yeah, those families are really without much access. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for this report. Can you just talk so first of all, I love the picture, the room before and after. When I was going through I was like, wow, this is like visually helpful to understand. And can you just talk about the conversational ball? Like, how do you use that?
So a mom actually purchased that. She found it on Amazon, and she's like, you think you can get her to use this? Because I can't. So while we're doing other things, so she likes to bake. So we'll bake, and then we'll play the game. So we just roll it back and forth and answer whatever questions are on the ball until her stuff is done. And she usually participates when, you know, there's something that she's going to gain from it. So that's how we do it. And I record her answers, and we talk about it afterwards. So.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next thing we want to talk about is the person-centered planning program and just the results we've gotten so far from starting the surveys surrounding specifically the person-centered plans. I know that was kind of an area of concern, and so just kind of the information we've gathered so far. So far... we've completed 64 plans this fiscal year, and we've gotten 27 surveys back. So we will be following up with people just to ask if they've sent one in yet, and if not, we'll be supplying them with a new survey to ask that, you know, they send one in. We've gotten five. I'm able to tell, you know, on the surveys, I ask, you know, who the case manager is, so we know that five have been completed with people who work with Angelina, who's one of our case managers, 10 with Christine, and 12 with Mary. So far, the first question is, do you feel that your person-centered plan reflects what was discussed during your discovery process? So far, 100% of respondents have answered this question, meaning that no one skipped it. We've had 100% of people say yes. Their options are yes, no, or somewhat. So far, everyone has said yes to this. Do you feel that your RPC case manager heard your wishes/desires and accurately developed outcomes based off of your preferences? Again, we had 100% of respondents answer this question, and so far, 100% have said yes. Are you satisfied with your person-centered plan developed by your case manager? 26 out of 27 respondents answered this question. We had one person skip the question and not providing any answer. Of the 26 that answered, all of them said yes, that they felt satisfied with their plan. Um, So what did you enjoy most about this process? So this is an open-ended area where they can write in information. We did have 11 people skip this and provide no response. Some of the other responses included having a friendly person to talk to, spending time with Christine, enjoyed our conversation, she was interested in what I had to say, we can talk with each other anytime, communicating well, thinking about new possibilities, communication, I enjoyed our meeting about my life and family. And then the last question was, how could this process be improved? We had 15 people skip or provide no answer to this. One person said, I don't know, and another said, not sure. Three people said nothing. And then we had some of the other responses said, keep Christine. Someone said, I think it is a good job. Someone else said, it is going well. We had someone say, updating forms and questions. We had someone say, keep on working at it and communicating with me. And then we had someone say, I want my life moving forward. Someone else said, make smaller, less questions. We agree with that, too, at times. With this discovery is a little lengthy. And then someone else said, too many big words on the assessments. And, you know, I think, you know, we do agree it's the discovery that we're using in the plan is one developed by the state, and there are a lot of questions on it. Many of them are kind of more geared towards people who are in the waiver, and many of them are pertain to people maybe living in a SILA, so they're asking about roommates. Those questions can be good for someone who, you know, when people are waiting on the puns and may enter into a SILA in the future, it's good for gathering preferences, but it may not pertain to them currently. So, so moving forward, you know, our plan is to continue to collect feedback from individuals receiving person-centered plans with the goal of hopefully getting 100% feedback, which probably is not going to happen, but we would like to get that from everybody. And then use the results of the surveys as a roadmap for a person-centered planning process in the future. And then just opening it up for questions about that. Yes.
I have one more question now that I think I understand better mm-hmm. the parameters of the program. You really are providing the services while people have been approved to be on the PUNS list, but are in that 5 to 7 year waiting period yes. to get onto a SILA or a home-based waiver.
Yes.
Fabulous, because we were just left hanging for those 7 years. That's wonderful. And then you work when they do receive that waiver to transition them to their personal support workers or to other services, or is it too soon to say?
So, yeah, so we'll work with people. They have to be receiving some sort of service that is county-funded, and that's how they then get linked up with a person-centered planning case manager. And then this year it was kind of new with us not managing the PUNS, and so the people who were PUNS selected, I had initially closed because I didn't want potential overlap between us and Prairieland of discovery processes and then the moving into funding. I now realize that that was very premature because it's taken longer for people to get into funding. So, you know, what I'm wanting to do and what we will do moving forward is hoping just for really good communication so that we can continue to serve people up until they get their award letter so that there's no gap in services for people. So they have a case manager working with them up until, you know, they get an ISC through Prairieland. So
I think if that's going to be, I mean, that's the ethically correct thing to do, but I think we need to apply serious heat if those are taking too long because that is the state wasting local money. And the systems don't do that in ignorance. They do it on purpose. This is not your problem. I think this is our problem. If we understand that it's taking too long to get people who have been selected from PUNS into a service plan and funded, then we need to do some pressure. Not your problem, but you can help us keep track of that. And I know DSC and Community Choices and PACE can also. That is a really serious issue. So thank you for not dropping people, because that's also serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I know this year I did, because I was concerned about potentially, you know, a duplication and didn't want, like, to be serving people and then be on the waiver. But, you know, I don't want to do that again. So I want to make sure we're continuing to work with people until they do have their awards. So
just let me know. I'll go after it.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I think we're through with our presentations, and it's time to look at the applications for funding, which are on page 86 through 91.
Well, so I just to kind of go quickly through a couple of these things, because this is the work that's in front of us. We learned a couple things this year. We gave 7 weeks for applications instead of 5. And really, I don't think that made much of a difference for agency applicants. It made a big difference for me, but that is not enough to push us too fast next year. So we worked really fast to get things approved during November so that we could launch the application system a couple weeks early. I can take care of what happens to me in a different way. It has to do with always opening the application system on an actual holiday. It's like it doesn't work out very well. Last year I was at the funeral home trying to make arrangements for my dad and dealing with problems with opening the system for 9 hours. So that was just, to me, that was just a big message. This is stupid and you can put it on a different day. So I don't think that was super helpful to the agencies. We did another thing differently this year that seemed to be really helpful, which was to have them do on a Monday instead of a Friday. And almost everyone got their stuff done early, like early, and some quite early. So that, I think that's a success that we might repeat. You know, maybe people will get used to a Monday deadline and then wait until that Monday to do all their work eventually. But this year it was great. So maybe next year too. We also had, there were a couple of snafus. They didn't affect everyone, but they would affect one applicant here and another here. So we have already asked for changes in the online system to prevent those glitches from happening again. Every time we change something in the system, it has, you know, it affects something else in the system. So we make these requests very carefully, but we've already asked for them. Hopefully that will make the agency user experience better next year. We have some other feedback from agencies that is a little harder to act on that we will need to revisit during the year. But right in front of us now is a review of applications. So there are two spreadsheets in your packet, and they're a little bit redundant. There's only one application submitted literally to the IDD Special Initiatives Fund. Other things could be funded there, but it was under one of the identified priority categories, which is short-term support for people with IDD. The Regional Planning Commission submitted an application for community life short-term assistance. Otherwise, the things that are currently funded under that fund do not need to be, and they are applied for on the DDB fund, which is perfectly appropriate. So that's why the spreadsheet's a little bit complicated. Then there are, at the very bottom, there are three programs funded by the Mental Health Board that have to do with developmental disabilities. That's part of their obligation to under statute. And we have a little work to do with figuring out the proportions of one of those. So it's very early in the season for this, but I have sent the PDFs of applications to y'all to look at, and I have some questions for you. Ready? First question, and this is something Kim Bowdry and I are already working on, is how would you like the information presented at the next meeting? And then it can be different at each meeting. Like, for example, next meeting, you could have this spreadsheet and then with the percentage change, which Kim has already figured out, if that's useful. And then we could also put reviewers on there if you choose to do the process that way. So anyway, so you like percentage. You can also just let us know if there's something you like. There is only one new application that we know of, and that is the community services or community life short-term assistance from the Regional Planning Commission. So I want to... I think so. Do you think so, Kim? So we'll also flag that as new because that's helpful. And then sort of sideways here is a memo. This is sort of the reviewing the process that you've used in recent years, but also raising, you know, and here's the timeline for what we'd like to do. It's not written in stone. It is written, but we can make changes to the process. I think given that you have a smaller number of applications to review and that the agencies are almost always here at your board meetings, if you wanted to ask them questions about the applications, I don't see any reason not to do it whenever you like. If they can't answer, we can get their responses and provide them to you in the next board packet or before. So, I mean, that just might make the process more smooth next year. Anyway.
I have a simple question. What happened to CU Autism Network?
So last year they applied for the first time in maybe 1 year, and they had an executive director who was like kind of a professional grant writer and really into this, and he resigned maybe July 1st. So the first day of the contract, he resigned, leaving them with, they had to sort of shuffle the roles around, make some board members paid staff instead of board members, and then find somebody else with that kind of reporting and grant writing experience. But she has a full-time job. So I think since the very beginning of this contract year, they've been quite overwhelmed with these requirements. So I don't know if they intentionally did not apply or missed the deadline because it's been very difficult for them to pay attention to this business. But it is, they also haven't really, I think we don't even have first quarter reports from them. So they're in a little bit of a limbo.
And do we actually have 20 grant requests to look at? Is that right?
We just counted them this morning. There's 16 to the DDB, right? Then one to IDZI, which I'm sorry, acronyms are gross. So that's 17. And then the two mental health board applications, which are early childhood and therefore a mix of behavioral and developmental supports. So those are, hopefully you'll be interested in reviewing those as well, because we can kind of figure out the portion of those which is DD. We already did it with one. The other one is a little harder. We need to talk to the agency. So.
So one thing that would be helpful, and I don't need it today, of course, but as we move along, is understanding the available funding for FY25 versus what the requests are. Because right now I can't tell if we have more requests than we have funding.
I can't tell you. that. We don't know how much money you'll get in 2025 until probably November, so I'm going to just give you guesses until
that's what then. I want, yeah. Just guesses. I know that you don't really know what the county okay. property taxes are
right.
until they're paid.
It's a lower increase than in the last several years, but we can talk about that offline. Is there, if you can't afford everything, then that's a basis for making decisions, but the other basis for making decisions is, do you want to purchase what's requested?
Right.
So
but it always makes a difference if you know that there's $1 million difference yes. versus not, because that is hard to raise $1 million, even if we want to purchase all the services. So just having some kind of a guideline, I understand.
I mean, I can't really
there's no
give
precision.
I will give you an initial budget in June,
yes.
which is after the time that you have to make these decisions, so it's going to be really guessing until then, but I've already worked on it because
okay.
thanks to Chris's staff report, I had year-end, really close to year-end. There might be a few extra things. So I've already done some work on it, and I can talk to you all about that, but I'm not confident of the numbers, and I'd hate to say something in public that binds you
right.
in a right.
So, you know, I haven't been on the DD board yet for a funding cycle. I was on the MHB board through 8 funding cycles. I don't know what the differences are between how the reviews are done for the DD board versus how they were done for the mental health board. And then I do remember that sometimes we would approve things pending availability of funds so that we always had that caveat. Mm-hmm. So are there...
It looks like, you know, the program year 24 total is $5,502,000, and what we're looking at for program year 25 is $6,092,000. So
right.
$500,000 more mm-hmm. than...
That's what I thought.
Than we're able to give this year in program year. And we don't know if we'll have that or not. Best guess estimate?
I think we should not talk about this in public.
Okay.
I don't want to create a problem for you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You are heard.
Okay, thank you.
I can say that... every contract has language in it about the adequacy of the fund. That's mm-hmm. been true for years and years. So mm-hmm. unfortunately, that happened in one of the first years that I was working for these boards, and we had to make reductions, especially in the DD contracts. And it was really
painful,
awful.
Yeah.
And we started by asking the agencies, what can you do without? So we really kind of shifted the pain to them. I don't know if that's the right thing to do either. So I can definitely work on this and keep you posted, but I don't want to create a situation right now that puts you in a bad position for the rest of the season.
Okay, this is just a point of information. At the bottom of the page of the first, the longer one, the priority young children and their families CCMHB focus. It says amounts listed are for DD portion only. So does that mean that the mental health board
has their own portion?
Has their own portion. So this amount, for example, family development DSC, $656,000, that's the DD portion.
That one is 100% DD, so that one
okay.
happily is really easy for us to figure
100%
out. 100%
DD.
100%, yeah.
Okay.
But the other two have a mix of services, and
okay.
and we're very confident with the calculation for CU Early that it's about, because it's about 20% of their total population are kids going into early intervention, so that's the DD or risk of DD group. We've got to talk to Head Start because I don't think this is right at all. But
okay.
it's Head Start has been dealing with a changing population, so they can tell us. So.
other point of information. Some things look like they're italicized or different font, and that relates to what? What does that mean?
It means I'm not sure yet. I wasn't sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does request to all three funds plus multi-year mean?
Oh, and those are italicized just to make them stand out a little bit. Request to all three funds means the total DD-related request to the DDB, Mental Health Board, and the IDD Special Initiatives Fund. That's the total amount of funding requested of all three funds that relates to DD. And it's an estimate because of that uncertainty I have about Head Start.
How do we review the grants? Is it similar to what was done with mental health, where we assign reviewers, but everyone's expected to have at least perused the proposals, or do we read all of them and discuss them in group? I'm just wondering about the process that I can prepare for.
I think that's for you all to decide, and let us know what we should do to support whatever process is going to work best.
Georgiana. Excuse me. Are you calling on people or?
No, just go.
Okay. I didn't want to step in. As the past president, I can say what we've done in the past, and Vicki may have ideas what she wants to do, but I think the process that I think you and Lynn developed for the Mental Health Board to make it possible to review the number of requests in the amount of time that we have has worked very well. And so I would propose that we do a similar type of model where each person is assigned a certain number of programs to be the primary reviewer and then other programs to be the secondary reviewer. And the primary and the secondary reviewer usually talk to each other, which is legal to do with just two people, and kind of come to an agreement, consensus as to what they want to do. And then at the meeting, the primary reviewer reviews briefly what they have figured out on the program, and the secondary reviewer is there to back them up. Or the secondary reviewer does it if the primary reviewer is not there.
And then the board can ask
questions. And the board can ask questions, but it streamlines the process. So that's what we've done the last few years, and I feel like it's worked really well. Vicki, do you have comments about that?
No, I think that's a perfect approach. It really worked well last year.
Do you all want to be randomly assigned, or do you want to let us know what you're interested in and we sort it out?
I'm okay.
Well, that
might
make it a little
assigned,
bit more complicated,
yeah,
for you, Lynn. But I'd say we can let you know our preferences, and you can sort them out from there.
That's really not that. That would be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Georgiana, can I ask a question? So can we get that percent difference in the chart? Is it already in
it's
there?
It's done already.
Oh,
it's okay. Just not. It was not included in this one. But yes, I can send that out when I get internet. I'm not allowed in here for some reason. But yes.
For the next meeting, we would get that information as well as our assignments. So then we can.
If you want.
We can absolutely do that. If that's the what you'd like to see, we can do that. And then we could do something different the next month if you want. It's just, we couldn't do very much this time because the applications were due at 4:30 p.m. Monday, February 12th. This board packet was due at 8 a.m. Monday, February 12th. So it was a little bit of like, I did some time travel. I got people to work late.
You did an amazing job. We're not expecting to have our assignments yet or all of the detailed information.
OK, Can I ask just another clarifying question? So then in April, we'd also get the staff, like, summaries of, is that the schedule?
That's the schedule, but that's another question. If you would like them to look different than they have in the past, let us know, because I've already, like, started bothering everybody for those. And if they shouldn't be the traditional format, we can change it.
I have no problem with what's been done before. It's been very useful. So whatever the staff wants to do is fine with me.
I'm in agreement.
Are we ready to move on? We have another item that needs our action, and that is the revised travel policy on pages 92 to 104. And I don't know if anybody has any comments on it. I've read through it and I do not have any comments on it. But if anybody does, this would be a good time.
Should we do a motion before we discuss?
Yes.
Okay. I have a motion to approve the attached revised travel and business expense policy for Champaign County Mental Health Board and Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board.
This is Vicki. I will second that motion.
So it has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on this travel policy? It sounds like we're just going to go right ahead and approve it. So all in favor, say aye.
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 And opposed? Okay. The travel policy is approved by the board.
I appreciate that. We had to update that because of so many changes in the county's policies and the county's accounting practice and IRS standard. So it was, even though that was from 2018 or 19, it was pretty out of date. So I really appreciate you acting on that. Thank you.
Now we have an evaluation capacity building project. Representatives from the Family Resilience Center will be are present
on Zoom.
So we're not taking any action. This is for information only.
Yep, just a quick update. Hi, I'm Stephanie. We are continuing to work with a couple agencies to give them technical assistance, and we're just moving that process forward, getting meetings in person happening. So I don't have a lot to report, but it's going well. That's where we are.
Does anyone have any questions of Stephanie? I guess we're just going to move on. Thank you, Stephanie.
Sure. Thanks.
We have an expo update. This year's expo has a date. And if you want to refer to page 105 in our booklets, the date is October the 26th of 2024 for the Disability Resource Expo. It is again at Marketplace Mall. And I don't know what else to say about that, except that I think that it was handled so well this last year that I'm hoping that it will be handled by the same people again this year.
And Chris has provided an updated on last year's event costs, because the expo is kind of, bills come in really late for the expo, and also revenues come in late, so there might even be another update to the update of last year's costs. But thank you for doing that, Chris.
Does anybody have anything to say about that expo, or should we move on? Maybe we'll just move on. Okay. Our next section to look at are the program year second quarter IDD program service reports, which I have looked at, and I don't really have any comments, but if anyone does, this would be a good time. Susan.
I had questions, and I don't expect to answer them today in today's meetings. So, and I did email Lynn because I was getting confused and putting question marks in a lot of places. The data reports only the second quarter data. When it says quarterly data, there's the annual target, quarterly data, and then continuing from last year. Three columns, or three rows, in the report. And it's just, it's hard for me to have a sense of how much progress is being made with new clients based on anticipated clients. So if the annual target is 5 and we have 2, I mean, that could be, that could suggest, I'm looking at see you early period on page, sorry, I just opened it to page 111. It could suggest that in the second quarter, 40% of the anticipated clients were seen. I don't know how many were seen in the first quarter, and if we're likely to see more than the projected 5, and maybe I don't need to know that. It's just the you know, if they've underestimated or overestimated, do we need to be at all concerned?
Well, I appreciated your question because I thought if Kim Bowdry was here, she could answer off the top of her head, but turns out she would need the internet, and she doesn't have it, but I do. And looks like the formulas are broken, but I can show you how Kim and Leon track everything, and it just.
Well, I do trust the staff to track.
No, but
I was
you
just,
can't
as
see
me as a reader. I can't make sense.
You
of
can't.
It.
The information is not available to you.
Yeah.
And you could maybe piece it together if you had the board packet with the first quarter reports and the second. But
don't want to do that.
Yeah, like that's a lot of extra. But we do track it, and we'll end up in those staff program summaries of each application. You'll be able to see where everybody was at the end of the quarter. No, not at the end of the year, because we won't be at the
right.
All we'll have is the first two quarters. So this is how they do it. This is See You Early, the one you were interested in. It looks like, and this chart looks a little different from the quarterly report. It's up on the screen. So it's organized a little differently than the quarterly report, which makes it really confusing when we're trying to enter data. So it looks like for See You Early, there were no continuing clients at the beginning of the year. No one continued from last year to this year. But there were 23 new clients in the first quarter, and then there are 2 new clients in the second quarter. So they're at 25, and their target was 23. So they are over the target for the whole year for treatment plan clients, which are the more high intensity. They do have 2 non-treatment plan clients in the second quarter. Are those kids referred to EI? Yeah. So those are the kids with the developmental issues.
So I can't get that information that you have here really from this. And so I'm just wondering if it's useful to have this information if I can't really interpret
it. I see.
It.
Well, we initially,
it's a lot of paper.
It is a lot of paper, but what we thought was really rich for y'all was the comments, and some of them
don't.
Well,
the comments are rich.
Some of them don't include comments, but I mean, you're right, and that is an issue that has come up before with the way what we're asking for in those quarterly reports, that it's not really that. Maybe that's not what people want to know. It doesn't show you volume of service during the quarter at all.
I don't know if I even really want to know that. I just was trying to figure out how do I deal with this information and how does it help me be a better board member.
Gotcha.
And certainly the comments give me some really interesting information, but the numbers I just can't use. So I'm just pointing it out since I'm new, and that was my reaction to the 20 or so pages.
Yeah.
Not as a criticism, but as a comment.
But it's an area for potential improvement. I think that one thing that is that I sort of take for granted on the DD set of agencies is that these are often long-term services for people already known to the system who
right.
continue year after year. So when we get in these early childhood programs, it's a totally different thing.
Right.
So the way we're asking may not be very useful, but she did put some cool comments in there,
yeah.
so there's that at least.
Yeah.
But thank you for raising the
yeah.
issue. And like I told you the other day, Kim Bowdry does know a lot of this stuff off the top of her head. She really does. But she doesn't think so, but...
It's a lot of paper, though.
It really is.
Thank you.
Anything else that we ought to be talking about? We have claims data. We have fourth quarter 2024 reports.
So the
211 reports.
Here's the claims data that you mentioned. I'll move to the next one. So the 211 report looks really different this time because they have a different director and they're reevaluating. I don't know if you all remember this. Like, this company has been also tasked by the state to do the 988 crisis line. And so they've been dealing with staffing woes since last year. So this report used to be really, really pretty, and I think the new director decided not to spend time on it. But it's a little bit harder to read because some of the data goes onto the next page. But this is how it was shared with us, and they say it'll look nicer next time. So.
So is this... Lynn, if I'm reading this right, on page 143, in the first box, we have October, November, and December. Is that the number of calls received in those months?
Yes, but I can't. It's very hard to read, isn't it?
Well, and then what's the next box, the 6, 6, and 5? Mm-hmm.
Is it chat?
Well, there's some calls
in Spanish is in the third box. And French is not there.
Oh, that's the next. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. That's the next. Okay. That's this page.
I don't necessarily
know what to do with it.
I don't know what to do with it. No, I mean, it sounds like they're very, very busy.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is true.
I guess I had one question, and that is on page... Let me find it. On page... I thought it was here it is, page 154, there's an inserted box with data, Salvation Army, Champaign County, Empty Tomb, etc. Were those referrals to those agencies, the number of referrals made to those agencies?
55. Is it one? Okay. 55.
So, for instance, there are 262 referrals, it looks like, to the Salvation Army. 225 to Champaign County. In the process of taking the calls, are these the agencies to which the callers were referred based on the questions that they asked?
That's what I assume from the title, but I could be reading it wrong.
Well, I thought it was really helpful to have the kinds of questions that were asked on the prior page, 153, mm-hmm. to know the range of issues that families are facing or users are facing. But then I just needed maybe a little bit more context for understanding what the next set of bars was.
Right.
And I'm not complaining. It's just...
Oh, no, that's... I think... And also, like, interesting, Champaign County is the Regional Planning Commission. That's...
Uh-huh. RPC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, it the way it's presented, you could take that for any Champaign County unit, and we know it's RPC. No, I believe that you've read it right, that this is where the calls were referred. And this is consistent with historical data from 2-1-1. It's almost, it's housing and homeless services. That's really the resource that people are calling for more than anything else.
So do we need this level of data as a board? I mean, clearly they're busy and we fund them.
You just get it because you're paying for it. But it's a lot of paper.
Now we have what we call successes and other agency information. And this is a time when individual agencies can tell us about successes if they would like to. I see someone coming up to the roster.
Good morning. Sarah Perry, Director of Residential Services at DSC. I'll make this very brief. Our community living program offers a monthly community experience that they help facilitate individuals to be a part of. And on February 8th, they went to the Soul to Soul experience at the Vineyard in appreciation of Black History Month. And it was a really amazing opportunity. They had six individuals participate with four staff, and they had an authentic soul food dinner, which was served at 6 p.m., followed by some kind of guided fellowship. So there was lots of questions that were offered at the table and gave the participants an opportunity to share what they do in their own culture. We had a gentleman that is very shy and introverted, and he really opened up and was comfortable about talking about his family experiences. And then it followed with gospel music and some worshiping, and there were several individuals that really enjoyed that experience. So it was kind of a unique atmosphere to see some of our participants really open up and enjoy that. We also had four local, and then two came down from Rantoul to participate. So that's it.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to present something? Oh, someone's coming.
This is Bill from Pace. I would like to report that Pace, we've had four successful PSW matches, and we've also been real active in recruiting personal support workers, and we have hired four new personal support workers in the last couple of weeks. We attended the library job fair last night. Got a lot of interested individuals, some of which are CNA students and RNs that were really interested in working with the personal support worker program. So Paula, my supervisor at Pace, she wanted to record this, but she's right now, she's in a noisy office, and she wanted me to report that to you guys. Thank you,
Pace. Tell me your name again.
My name is Bill Kabaita.
Okay.
I'm an independent living specialist at Pace, and Paula Veneer is the personal support worker coordinator for the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
And we are going back in and for all the pension, we go to do some in on Zoom for all the pension. So all people that we help to maintain peace that we use that you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now we have another person here.
Good morning, Patty Walters from DSC. I just have a couple of fun and informational shares. Yesterday was able to secure a date of May 13th, so kind of a save the date for an ABLE account informational meeting that's going to be held at the library. I'll have more details this time next month. It's a hybrid model based on what the treasurer's office is offering right now for that. One of the things that'll be, I think, kind of a nice ad for people that want to come in person and watch the webinar together is that they will be having a civic engagement representative come and also have a laptop set up to help people try to look to see if they have any unclaimed property. So, you know, maybe there'll be some good big wins or something that night. That would be fun. So I'll have more information next month for that. I wanted to speak a second just on family development. You guys don't hear a lot about that program. It's funded by the Mental Health Board through DD funded commitment. And I just wanted to share that there are a couple of different developmental play groups that are happening that we're really proud of and some collaborations in the community. There are, as everybody knows, a significant shortage in therapists in our community. And in order to kind of try to fill that gap, there are some efforts to hold these play groups to kind of arm families with some things that they can do at home and connect families to each other. So right now there's an OT developmental play group that's happening at Salt and Light every week, and then there's a play project collaboration with TAP, the autism program, that has been very well received in the past that has just recently restarted. So in the absence of some of that one-on-one support that the babies and infants and parents get, this seems to be kind of an effort to really kind of fill that gap until services become available to those folks. And, you know, those are the things that you guys are funding. So just wanted to share that. And then the last one is fun. I think we reported last year that we have groups that are anime and comic interests and stuff, and so we had a few people that went to Comic-Con last year, and that has grown over the year, and we have 8 people that will be going in March. So we'll hopefully be able to kind of report on that next time too, but that's in Indianapolis, and I think there's a handful of them that also intend to actively participate and dress up. So it kind of is expanding to more active participation rather than, you know, being a presence, but it's tens of thousands of people that participate in that event. So it'll be fun to learn more about that next month. So just wanted to share. Thank you. Any questions with any of those? Okay.
Thank you. Mel from Pace is about to speak to us, I think.
Good morning, everybody. Hope you guys can hear me. But it's just a quick announcement. On tomorrow here at Pace from 1 to 3, our Deaf Advisory Advisory Committee, DAC, is meeting. But we are inviting a speaker from MedCAD. Because we have, they're talking about how for an emergency, how to communicate with MedCAD without voice. So we will have them in at Pace as speakers. And so to kind of do awareness on how that process is, we would like to invite everybody who might think that, or anyone that you know that would benefit to know that process. We would love for you guys to come to Pace. It's from 1 to 3 tomorrow. We will have the speaker from MedCAD, and also possibly WCIA will be here for the awareness. So it is because it was hosted by our Deaf Advisory Committee. So, but everybody's welcome. So if anyone thinks that they want to know about that process or that service with MedCAD, we'll feel free to come by at Pace from 1 to 3. We will have the speakers here. So, just, and I can send out the flyers too. to share with everybody.
Thank you, Mel. You said that was at PACE's headquarters, right?
It is at 1317 East Florida. So I will, again, it is tomorrow from 1 to 3.
Okay.
Here. So I will also follow up with a flyer to send to everybody. So please share it to anyone that would benefit from it.
Thank you. Say that. Who is it?
Dr. Jones. Hi, this is Allison Jones calling. Dr. Jones. I was just wanting to make sure or to congratulate Nancy Utman. I think she's there participating in person. She's a nurse and social worker in town and has volunteered a lot to help our family as a deacon from First Presbyterian Church. But she was recently appointed to the state, I think it's the Governor's Commission for, it's a task force on respite care. And looking at that, I know that's been a need for many families in town, and I just wanted to make sure people were aware she's on that so that any things regarding needs or either in our county or other things people are hearing about, that maybe you could transmit those to her or vocalize or document these issues so that they can make good use of their time and try to get some innovation and support, especially in the area of intermittent SOA or respite care for next generation families or taking over for parents. I think that's very important, and I think that's a need that is really a problem in the state and also particularly our county. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. Are there any other speakers? Anyone want to present anything? Is that the last of our hands up?
Sorry, running out of battery.
Yep.
Zoom meetings are costly.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anyone else is raising their hand.
Well, the next item would be county board input, which would be Leah. Do you have anything for us, Leah?
I don't have anything this month. Everything's pretty quiet on the county board front. Sorry. No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, Kyle has left us. The board chair has left us to become the Champaign Township supervisor. So, I mean, that's been the hot news. You know, so we're electing a new chair tomorrow.
Do we have any Champaign County Mental Health Board input?
They'll meet tonight, and they also have a presentation. They have one presentation. It's on the strategic plan that's been developed through a Mental Health Board-funded program for coordination of the homeless services. So it's the local strategic plan around housing supports. So it'll be interesting. Yeah. And then otherwise, they have pretty much the same business you all do. They have, I think, 23 mental health or substance use related applications to review. That might actually include the two early childhood ones as well. So that's a little less than last year.
Yeah.
Make me feel really happy. Just the work ahead of us. So.
Well, if there is nothing else, do we have any other board announcements or input at all? Oh, Kim.
I'll be very quick. So I can't remember, so please excuse me if this is a repeat, but did we ever, so in the December county board meeting, I think Chris Wilson was congratulated or for his 10 years of service to the county. So I wanted to say thank you, Chris, for your service. And also, Kim Bowdry was recognized for 15 years of service to the county. And so just thank you both for your service. We didn't bring it up because the whole meeting I was like, did we bring it up? I couldn't remember. Okay. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up was Chandra Somerville was nominated as a local hero at the CU Schools Foundation. So congratulations, Chandra. We're so happy that you got that award.
Thank you very much.
Yes. And then the last thing is, Kim, I wanted to thank you for putting that PDF training last year, the how do you make PDFs screen readable training, maybe like November, December of 2022. I actually shared that. So Tina Childress, who does like trainings, is doing an ASL pop-up. So they reached out to me at ISU to send that information out to our students, but their PDF wasn't accessible. So I said, oh, let me just make it accessible and I'll send it out to you. And they were like, well, how do you make PDFs accessible? I was like, well, I have a webinar for you. So I shared it with them and they're very happy to have it. So thank you for putting that on. I actually had to Google it, but it's got shared.
It sounds wonderful. Thank you, Kim. If we are all through, I think we will adjourn this meeting. Do I need to take a vote on that?
Recording stopped.